The pursuit of happiness, the search for contentment, the desire for peace with what we have and who we are. Happiness, we're taught, is an inalienable right, and striving for it, a lifetime goal. So why are so many of us uneasy? Worried we may not be as happy as we could be or we should be. One of Australia's leading authors, David Malouf, has turned his mind to the theme of happiness in the essay The Happy Life, The Search for Contentment in the Modern World. And I spoke with David Malouf earlier this week in our breakfast studio.
Good morning, Fran.
The good life versus the happy life, they're not the same thing. That's partly what you explore here in this essay.
Yes, well, the good life would once have been to people a life lived with virtue. When we talk about the good life, we really mean a world of goodies. We mean lifestyle. That's a big change. And for some reason, we have achieved the good life. I think we'd all have to agree that we live in a world that is pretty safe here. It's affluent. We are well-fed, well-housed. We're free mostly of the worst of those things that would once have made man miserable, disease, famine, early death. So all of that we've got, but somehow contentment has eluded us. We still feel that there's more and we haven't got it. And we live in a state of permanent stress, anxiety, discontent.
So as you say, we have little to complain of, but we are more stressed than ever. Now you talk about contentment there. Is contentment the vital ingredient for happiness?
Well, I think when people say happy, they don't just mean happy at moments. They mean that their life has somehow for them been settled and they've come to a position where they know who they are, they're comfortable in the world. I think that's what contentment means and would once have meant, say, to classical philosophers. But that is not what most of us feel we've got. Somehow the world's too big for us, to far beyond our control.
This notion of, I mean, you say in the book, the good life versus the happy life, to go back there, belong to separate and in some ways unconnected meanings of happy. One refers to material fortune, as you've explained, which can be objectively measured. The other to an interior state that cannot. Is that the problem? We actually can't know because we can't measure when we're happy or what happiness is.
I think that's part of it. But I think what's happened is that some things have got out of scale. And that is, as creatures, we most of our lives on this planet lived in a very, very constricted space. And almost everything that we have done is relatable back to the body. And now technology has given us a consciousness which makes us feel that the whole of the universe is within our sight in one way. And in another way, something infinitely small, like we can actually look at a screen and see the planet we're on, or we can look at a screen and see a malaria virus taking over a human cell. Those things have been made available to us by technology, and it's hugely expanded our consciousness in both directions. But we're still dealing with the same bodies, and we're still dealing with emotions and a psychology that wants what we have and can see to be in our control.
So technology has outrun or moved beyond what our psychology can deal with, in a sense. It's offering us opportunity and capacity and, you know, great outlook, but in our own minds, does it make us feel powerless to see that we're such a tiny skerrick of such a big thing?
Well, I think that when we were inhabitants of a village, we knew what was happening there. Now that we have to think of ourselves as being inhabitants of a planet with all the responsibility that that involves and so much that lies beyond our control, or when we think, for example, that our daily lives are at the mercy of things like climate change, international finance, international terrorism, we know these things because information technology tells us about it and makes us aware of it. We can't really deal with it.
And it brings us to the economy. Happiness requires safety. That's one of the elements of your thesis here.
Yeah.
And a sense of being in control, which you were just discussing. Is the economy a key driver of unrest within us? Is there a link, clear link between the economy and happiness? Because many of us, of course, as you say, know that we are not in control of our individual economic fortunes or the fortunes of our village, our town, our country and the world.
Yes. Well, look, once upon a time when there was a force that we felt we were at the mercy of, like fate, we created a kind of mythology so that we made that the forces themselves personal. They were the gods. They were like us. We thought we could understand them and we believed they were interested in us. When you think of international global finance, that remains abstract, impersonal. It has nothing to do with us. It doesn't know we're here. You know, we living in a world in which the forces you are dealing with have become completely abstract and depersonalized and therefore unknowable as well as uncontrollable. Is pretty scary.
I'm speaking with author David Malouf about his quarterly essay, The Happy Life, The Search for Contentment in the Modern World. David argues that one of the drivers of unease in our life is the pace of the world in which we live.
You know, obviously, technology now is its own force. It develops at its own rate, and it develops very, very fast. We don't realise sometimes that change was so slow until about the middle of the 18th century, that people did not realise that the world they were living in was different from the world their grandparents were living in. Change is so fast now that from year to year, almost from week to week, things are changing so that all of us can't catch up. We can't control that because we've kind of let the genie out of the bottle in the way in of technology. All we can hope for, I suppose, is that we can start to change, evolve even, to a point where we are equal to the technology we've created for ourselves.
And I wonder, it's hard to measure if you're in a point of that evolution. I mean, you write of your own strategy to keep control of this speed. You write in longhand. And you say that the pace of that, quote, has a natural relationship with your mind. It also has an effect on syntax. So that's your way of slowing things down. But perhaps for those generations that have come after you, their minds are moving at a faster rate.
A much faster rate, and their consciousness is different. I mean, they can do all that multitasking stuff, which most of us, I speak for my generation, can't, you know, find extraordinary. So they are changing, but I wonder how fast they're changing.
Nevertheless, is a conclusion of what you've been saying here today and as you write, that a simple life produces a happier life?
I think yes. I think a life in which we feel all the elements that are shaping our life are reasonably within control, or at least have human faces that we feel we can deal with, makes it easier for us. Of course, people have always lived with the unknown. They've always lived with the fear of plague, for example, or invasion, or death, or accident. That's always been so. But I think we've created for ourselves whole areas of anxiety that we've not yet learned emotionally or physically to deal with.
Your essay begins and ends with Shukov, a man in the gulag, living in the gulag in very difficult circumstances, yet he's happy within his limits. Tell us about Shukov and that what that example tells us.
Well, I chose that example because you would think that within a modern world, our modern world, not the whole planet, of course, but within our advanced world, we would think we live in pretty well ideal conditions. And if we wanted to think of the worst possible thing that can happen to you there, you would think of someone in either a Nazi extermination camp or a gulag. And you would think that that was the epitome of misery. All the conditions contribute to misery. And yet that man is happy because, you know, when he lies down to sleep, at the end of that one day that we see in his life, everything that he was able to do, he did, and everything that might have happened that was bad didn't happen. And so he can go to sleep thinking he has had a day in which he was content. He did some work that he was pleased with. He got more of the rations than he expected, all of those things. That's a terrible irony. And I hope to end on that ironical point that if you wanted to take an example of a man whose conditions actually are the worst possible, but because he can cope with them, he is contented, then that's that man in the gulag.
And that's basically your final conclusion, is that momentary happiness is the best we can achieve. Do we need to recalibrate our expectations?
Momentary happiness we are all capable of, but conditions, no matter how bad, that still have a human face and that we still feel we can cope with because they're within our physical and emotional range is what will make us happy.
David Malouf, thank you very much for joining us on Breakfast.
It's a pleasure, Fran.
Some reassuring words from acclaimed author David Malouf that we are all capable of momentary happiness if sometimes it seems to elude you. His quarterly essay, The Happy Life, The Search for Contentment in the Modern World, is published by Black Ink Books. And if the pursuit of happiness is something you'd like to dwell on, you can hear that interview again. You can stream it on our website. You can download it as a podcast. True, of course, of all the stories here on Breakfast.